Into a Tuesday edition of the Daft on Draft podcast. In this edition, we'll be going over week 10 as we normally do, giving out some helmet stickers. We're going to double up again this week, though, with our helmet stickers and Dafter draft, because we got another mock draft on lock, ready to roll on Tuesday and Wednesday this week. So we usually do Dafter draft on Tuesday. Go ahead and just roll that over into this episode as well with some helmet stickers. Before I get too deep into conversation, Dalton Miller, as always. How is it going? Welcome in.
Oh, yeah. Good switch there, too. I usually do that when I come in, but I missed it that time. Anybody not watching on YouTube, go check it out on YouTube. We were in the wrong spots. But I am doing well. I actually watched the Penn State-Ohio State game, or at least the first half of it, with a very good friend and his family. All went to Penn State. So that was a not great time watching that football game in a Penn State household. But I came back for the second half and watched the rest of the tragedy that is a James Franklin coach football team.
Yeah, it's kind of predictable at this point, isn't it?
Yeah. Like even more than Ryan Day, because I understand that Ohio State fans have their gripes with Ryan Day. And I know that you have been throwing out the Mike Vrabel picture every time something bad at Ohio State happens.
Yeah.
And I get it. But I'm telling you, it could be worse. I'm telling you, it could be James Franklin, because it is worse with James Franklin.
What's bizarre to me is, like, Penn State seems okay with this. Like, they seem okay with 8 wins, 9 wins every year, and that's cool.
10 wins. I mean, they're a really good team. They just can't win the big games, ever. They can't win the big games.
That's what's bizarre to me. They're just like, yeah, that's cool. That's fine. Yeah. Keep doing that. We're fine.
It's so weird from a blue blood, but I do think the years late in Joe Pa's career where things started to go downhill a little bit, they weren't recruiting the same way, and they were bad. To have James Franklin and know that you're going to get, you know, 9-10 wins every year, it's they just do seem okay with the mediocrity.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's – I think maybe the best.
They're going to make the playoff this year. Like I say that.
And yeah. Now it's a 12-man playoff. They're probably even better with it. Like, oh, we're going to get an additional game. We're cool with that. We're going to get our bowl game still. So, speaking of mediocrity, we might as well talk about the quarterback play in this one a little bit. I can't. Well, we'll talk about quarterback play. And then there's also something else I want to talk about. Drew Aller is allergic to making a big throw. He won't throw the ball down the field. And I don't know if that's game planning, like the offensive coordinator just does not trust him to do that. And so he's scheming up areas where Aller can just get the ball out of his hand fast. He hasn't thrown a ball over 25 yards in the last two games. He's thrown one in the last 3 weeks. Like, he's just not pushing the ball down the field at all. He had a couple nice little wheel routes and like sideline boundary throws, including the interception was a really nice ball that got picked off in the end zone. It was a really nice ball that his receivers, man.
They're terrible.
They're very bad. And so I get it.
That's got it. Well, I was going to say that's got to go into the decision, because it's not just that they're bad. They're also slow. They're not a quick group at all. So it's tough out there unless you're forcing the ball to Tyler Warren.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the next thing I was going to say. That entire offense, he's the whole plane. They've built the plane out of Tyler Warren in Penn State. And then they literally, that last drive, potentially game-tying drive, literally build the whole drive out of Tyler Warren, get 2 yards out from the end zone, and they don't put the ball into their 6'6", 260-pound former quarterback a single time.
The only reason they got down there, because he had – that same drive was the big catch and then the run as well. That was all that one drive.
Yeah. We're getting to the point now where we probably need to start talking about, well, how high is too high for Tyler Warren? We might be encroaching on that territory.
Yeah. I do wonder about that, because his blocking is just still legitimately not very good. But again, we keep going back to it. Like, he's 6'6". He's a former, he's 260 pounds. He's a former quarterback. Like, does he just not really have the core strength? Because I don't see a lot of physicality in his game whatsoever when it comes to the block. So it's not even just like a technique thing. It looks like he wants to be good at it.
Yeah.
But he just doesn't have a lot of pop, and that's really, really weird considering what happens when he runs into people, when he has the ball in his hands, and what he can do as an athlete. Like, as a route runner, he's physical. He gets open with using his body. There was a huge third down play where he could have just absolutely boxed out the safety, and Allar didn't go there. And I'm not quite sure why. And I'm not quite sure why their entire offense isn't forcing touches, like forcing the ball to Tyler Warren.
Yes, I 100% agree. Again, going back to his play strength as well, he's plus 50% on 50-50 balls as well. So contested catch situations, he's 6 of 9 on the season. So 50-50 balls to a 6'6", 260-pound dude are not 50-50 balls.
And he's got to be averaging like 8 yards per carry on the ground too. Like every single time he touches the ball on the ground, something cool happens. And it's not just like he's running downhill either. He's like pressing the line of scrimmage and then bouncing outside and winning the corner. Like, this dude is a freak.
Yeah, he is averaging 8.7 yards per carry.
All right, so Nick Singleton isn't RB2 anymore. It is now Tyler Warren. Tyler Warren is RB2. Yeah.
Yes. Well, Caleb Johnson, but well, whatever. yeah, outside of that, we had predicted the slate might be a little slow, and it was a little slow this weekend. But we'll get into that, talking about our helmet stickers.
I do need to bring up one thing. I would like to apologize to everybody, every Gig'em Aggie fan out there. Yeah. It's my fault. I said that they were the dark horse best team in the country, and then they went out and they got dog walked by South Carolina. This is what has happened to me all year. I came into the year excited about DJU. Oh my God, that turned out to be one of my worst takes of all time. I said something about Illinois' quarterback right now. Why can't I think of his name? Luke Altmyer, singing his praises. And he goes off of a cliff immediately. Like, I have to stop making declarative statements that are kind of hot. I'm done with it. I'm not doing
it. That's what makes the business fun. You gotta throw them out there.
And everybody's wrong. Exactly. And I'm okay with being wrong because I know it's going to happen every once in a while.
Cool with that.
And in the NFL draft world, it happens all the time. Anyway,
all the time. Yes, for sure. I didn't have that Texas A&M defense giving up 44 points on my bingo card.
No, not to that football team. Football team. But
yeah. In other news, IU keeps winning. Kansas State lost. Big 12's wide open. Colorado and Shador Sanders.
I mean,
got better somehow on an offense.
I don't think we talk about this enough for Colorado. Like, nobody expected this.
No.
Nobody. This is a 4-win team last year. A 4-win team, and they have a legitimate chance at winning the Big 12.
They've got a pretty favorable schedule too. I know Texas Tech just had the huge upset win this week, but they've got Texas Tech next.
Yeah, Texas Tech's not a bad team.
No, they are not, and they're pretty fun. They're pretty fun. They've got Texas Tech this week, then they've got Utah, and Utah's having a terrible year, terrible season. But again, they're always a well-coached team, but they don't have any quarterback play whatsoever. And then Kansas, another team that's having a terrible season after it looked like Lance Leipold had them resurrected from the dead.
Yeah, that's a weird one because I legitimately thought that Kansas would be a pretty decent team again this year, and they have not been.
No,
they haven't. Anyways, yeah, I mean, that's coach of the year for Deion, right? Like,
we're in that territory.
You almost asked me.
I mean, no, Cignetti probably has it on lock right now.
Yeah.
In Bloomington, Kurt Cignetti's probably got it on lock, but Deion's definitely in the conversation for sure.
Yeah. Because Indiana's another team nobody saw coming. So
no, not at all. No way. They've got Penn State this week. If they beat Penn State, there's no shot College Game Day is not Columbus, Ohio.
Think about how much offense that team has in Indiana. And then
with a bunch of no names outside of Curtis Rourke, who's a bunch of
fifth and sixth year guys,
who played 5 years in the MAC. Yeah, it's wild.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that offense can move. And Penn State has a really good defense. Penn State's offense, we just talked about it. It's Tyler Warren and Nick Singleton or bust. That's it. That's all they got. So I.
And then the following, I don't have a ton of confidence in Ohio State's offense right now either.
No.
No.
Shout out to Will Howard for coming back in that football game.
That was a rough and first half for him.
Oh yeah.
Two turnovers and two bad turnovers. 14-point swing worth of turnovers in that game.
Yep.
And he was able to come back from that. So yeah.
Yeah. For sure. His emotions, especially because of the story, obviously the story behind him and not getting an offer from Penn State and all that. Like those big turnovers against the team that he wanted to play, he could have easily crumbled and fell apart in that game. And to come back and perform better in the second half was big from him.
For sure. All right. I feel like we can hit the rest of the slate as we're going through our helmet stickers.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So let's dive into that. I'm going to start with mine just because we already touched on the game a little bit, my first one. And it's going to be a running back, and I'm going to go back to that Texas A&M and South Carolina game. I'm going to talk about Raheem Rocket Sanders a little bit. You know, I liked Rocket a lot a couple of years ago.
Was it 2 years ago?
Yeah, a couple of years ago. Now he's in his fifth or fourth season with, you know, of eligibility here. And you can tell that his body is not as ample as it once was when he was with Arkansas. Although he's got a career high in yards after contact this year. And so that's, but the missed forced tackles are way down. And I do see a lack of burst overall based on, you know, where he was in Arkansas, but they don't win this game without him against Texas A&M. I mean, he just turned out yards and yards and yards in crucial situations for South Carolina in this win against Texas A&M. Finished the game 20 attempts for 144 yards, two touchdowns in this game, including a massive breakaway run that he scored on as well. 119 yards after contact, three runs of over 10 yards, two runs of over 15. So just picked up 7 first downs of the day and caught 5 passes for 92 yards out of the backfield. That's over 200 yards of total yards, folks.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good day. Also, considering his career high in catches in a season ever is 27. He caught 5 in one game this past weekend as well. So that's half of his entire 2023 total.
Big man's doing some work. Yes. Big man's doing some work with the hands. We might as well stick with the position. My first helmet sticker is going to North Carolina running back Omarion Hampton. I am bringing this game up for a particular reason. One is that he had 4 touchdowns in this game. One was a pretty long touchdown, and he had a couple of really big runs in this game. His size, explosiveness, hands combo are awesome. That it's everything you want in a back physically, right around 6 foot, 220 pounds, super physical, violent runner. Great. I mean, super high, like close to Travis Etienne level, first level, second level explosiveness. He doesn't have the long speed of Etienne, but he's got enough long speed. He's a big play guy. He makes guys miss a little bit. He has a nasty stiff arm. He's super physical. Guys, his vision is not great. Is the way that I will say it. So he went out, and I'm talking about this game where he had 172 yards against Florida State. No less than 6 or 7 times. Just ran straight into the back of his blockers at the first level. We're talking about somebody who I think is trying to read and react and manipulate the second level defenders without having any understanding what is happening right in front of him. Yep. I think he's trying to see through the trash. What's my next move going to be? And by the time he figures it out, because he wants to get to the line of scrimmage so fast, that he has no room to actually react. And this is kind of the differences that we talk about with Caleb Johnson, who it's natural. He doesn't even have to like see something. He can feel where he needs to be. His feet get there. And with Hampton, if there is not a gap to run through, he's not breaking the line. It's not happening. And so for me, I have a really difficult time, even with his receiving ability, with the willingness that he shows in pass protection, without the vision to go with it. I mean, they can't run zone with him. They can't do it. They try. It doesn't work out very well. Yeah. So if he doesn't have a hole to run through, what is it, where does that leave us at the next level? And that's mm-hmm. kind of my worry with him overall. Great back, but he reminds me of a former North Carolina back who we all thought was going to be an absolute stud at the next level. Javonte Williams, same issues.
Cannot run zone. Yep. My cut for him is Damian Pierce. He's a better pass catcher.
He's a better I think he's a better athlete too.
But that's kind of the same situation that Damian Pierce is experiencing in Houston. He can't see the field because he's very gap specific, and he can't run mm-hmm. zone. So putting him on the field is a massive tell to opposing teams about what you are going to run. And so he just doesn't play very often in Houston anymore. After a pretty strong rookie season as well with them, and then they had that regime change. Bobby Slowick came in, obvious Shanahan disciple. And it's just been a different story.
And he's been injured too, but
he has been. He has been, but all right.
My second one.
Yeah. Go with it. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll go to Minnesota and Illinois for this one. We will go to Minnesota left tackle Ariante Ursary. And part of the reason why I wanted to bring this up is just because I like his game overall in a class of offensive tackles that you don't really know if you can count on as tackles. He doesn't have the highest ceiling out of this group of guys. But I do think that when we just look at how the offensive tackles have played so far this year, he might be the best of the group. I think Jonah has been really good. And he's played actually a little bit of right tackle for Arizona as well this year. But Ursary is just kind of a more dependable guy. Overall, he allowed 4 pressures, according to PFF, in this game. I know he got beat once inside, not by Yakis, but by number 4, I believe, or maybe number 9. Illinois' numbers are terrible. But he had a really good game against Yakis, and that's an NFL player right there. He's got good size, got good power. So I liked what I saw from Ursary, and overall this year, although he hasn't played a ton of great pass rushers, he held his own against Michigan and then had a good game, I thought, against Illinois. He could end up being what, OT 2-3 off of the board?
He could be. He's got a matchup with Will Carter here in a couple weeks.
I have no clue what to do with this tackle class right now.
I don't either. Clue. Like, how do you decide who's going to be a tackle and who's going to be a guard? Yeah, exactly. I'm just tending to go off of upside at this point, athletic upside. But even like, I'm going to probably grade Emory Jones as a guard. Like, I think that's where I'm at. It's so difficult to figure out this class because, again, at the end of the day, they're all probably guards, but you can't have 15 guards, 3 tackles that you're grading. So it's like, what do you do? So it's very tough. I do think Ursary, because I do think he has some athletic upside and has some length, I think you could probably grade him as a tackle. But again, there's people who want him a guard too. So that's just the kind of way it is at this class.
And Jonah, like literally.
And Jonah, Sabina, yeah.
Every single tackle
is
also Jonah, a guard this year.
I got verified on his arm length, and man, I was stunned by it at 34 and a half. I didn't see that coming with him. And with his foot speed at that size, like I think you can keep him at tackle too. Which he was the most popular guy to kick inside to guard over the summer. I think he's for sure a tackle in this class as well. He's got a very dense lower half, so he can definitely play guard. But just the foot speed and the length, I think he can play tackle. But Ursary's a good one. He's got a matchup here with Abdul Carter, and we'll talk a little bit about Carter here later in this episode as well in a couple weeks. That'll be a big one. That'll be a big one for Ursary there. So, my second one, I'm going to go back to the Ohio State-Penn State game, and I'm going to highlight a player that probably is going back to school. 80% going back to school, 85%. probably not.
Hey, remember, these helmet stickers are draft eligible guys.
Draft eligible for sure. And especially in NIL, like any true junior that's not like a standout, you're like, oh, that guy's probably going back to school now. Like, that's just how I feel. But I'm going to give it to Ohio State cornerback Davison Igbinosun. One of the more penalized corners in the nation, I will say.
Even in this game.
He was penalized, I believe, on the play before he made the play of the game.
The exact play before.
Yeah, he was penalized for. He might have saved this game for Ohio State. Straight up, they won by 7. That play right before halftime to make that interception, an unbelievable play in the back of the end zone. Probably 40% luck, but there's a lot of concentration to keep the foot inbound, to keep your body in bounds, hauling that football, bouncing off the hands of an Aller receiver there, a Penn State receiver there, into his chest. But it was an unbelievable play. And potentially, I mean, the Ohio State came out and kicked a field goal out of the half, so that's a 10-point swing that he saved Ohio State on that play. And it's not like he was in bad position in coverage either. It was a really good ball from Aller.
It was right past his ear hole.
It was indeed. But that's a 10-point swing on that play for Ohio State, and then to come out and get 3 on the board. And that's all it took. That's the game right there. That's the ball game. Again, 8 penalties this year. But I think he has a lot of tools that NFL teams have proven to covet over the years. NFL teams want length these days. And he's 6'2", got great vines for arms. And so, you know, I think he'll go back. And if he can continue to get better, I think he's better this year than he was last year as a sophomore in his first year at Ohio State. The Ole Miss transfer played as a true freshman at Ole Miss as well. So, but I'm going to give him a helmet sticker because I do think at the end of the day, going into halftime, 17-7 is much different than going into halftime 17-14. And that's a huge, huge shift in momentum for Ohio State in that game.
I can't believe he caught that football.
It was unreal.
Yeah. It was an unbelievable pick by him.
Yeah.
Because when I saw it live, because it was shot from the high angle there and you couldn't actually see the corner of the end zone, I was like, oh, that's a touchdown. Uh-huh. And then I saw Igbinosun had the ball when he came up and I was like,
in the foot and bound and everything. It's whack. So that's my second one. Third one, I'm going to go with the quarterback, man. I talk a lot about quarterbacks and how much I hate this quarterback class. So it's only fair that I give a helmet sticker to a quarterback that I think deserves one this week. And it's a quarterback that I had been a little bit critical on in some articles. You know, I dropped my preseason or my midseason quarterback rankings, and that's Ole Miss's Jackson Dart. Dart started the season on fire against like a bunch of FCS schools and low level competition. Got into SEC play and it's been pretty rough for Jackson Dart since he came into SEC play. Putting it lightly, that loss to Kentucky, the LSU game, he kind of fell off there at the end. Wasn't able to really sustain it and maintain that lead in that game either. Obviously, Ole Miss has a defense that didn't do their part as well. I acknowledge that, but it's been rough for him in SEC play. That was not the case this past weekend against Arkansas. Finished 25 of 31, 515 yards and 6 touchdowns and 0 incompletions. Just a stellar outing. Again, I charted all the guys that played this past week, and it was a huge uptick, especially deep down the field for Jackson Dart in this game. And again, there were a couple blown coverages, so he was thrown to a couple wide open deep balls, but just like some SEC plays, his deep ball against South Carolina, let's start with Kentucky. 1 of 6 deep ball against South Carolina, 3 of 9, 3 of 9 against LSU, 1 of 3 against Oklahoma. He was 4 of 5 in this game. So the deep ball accuracy, because Ole Miss will just still, they will spam it. They'll throw verticals all game, no matter if it's hitting or not. And so it was good to see that for the first time since entering SEC play, Jackson Dart got his deep ball back a little bit in this game as well. Dropped 515 yards on Arkansas's defense in this one. A huge win. They dropped 60 points on him. So anytime you can drop 60 in a college football game, in SEC play, that's a pretty good day. That's a pretty good day at the office. So Jackson Dart, you're going to get my third and final helmet sticker.
Yeah, I actually watched that game from that side of the ball. I was watching Landon Jackson because he had 7 pressures in this game. And oh my gosh,
that Ole Miss left tackle is rough.
Yeah, well, he's rough. But also, God, that Arkansas defense played so badly.
Yeah,
so badly. My third and final helmet sticker goes to who should be everyone's favorite college football player.
I love him.
Everyone's favorite college football player. If you don't know who I'm talking about, reevaluate your life. It is Miami wide receiver, slot wide receiver, do-it-all guy, Xavier Restrepo. What an absolute monster. He had a huge game. There were some kind of gimmies, you know, along with it, but he had a massive, you know, I think it was 66-yard touchdown where he made a couple of guys miss. He had the very first play of the game, big hit over the middle, was a drop, I would say. He had another big drop downfield, but he was also in the right place at the right time for the touchdown, right sideline, deep ball. The ball was not going to him. It was going to the crossfield in the back of the end zone. Ward didn't quite get it there. Defender tipped it, and it ended up in Restrepo's hands. But he had three touchdowns for this football game. He shows up week in and week out, does everything for them. He blocks his ass off in the run game for them. And when you watch him, you think, oh, he's like a slot receiver. He's, you know, like 5'8", 5'9", 175. And he's like 190. So
he's thick. He's dense.
He's got some density to him. And that makes you a little bit more. It makes his projection a little bit easier to the next level, because that's a body that you can imagine is going to hold up, because he already shows physicality at this level, at the college level, you know, playing in the ACC. But I do really think this is a guy who he's going to test all right. We know he can run routes. Mm-hmm. And he's not just your slot guy who is a third down, you know, third and five merchant. No, he's somebody who can legitimately make plays down the field as well. He tracks it well downfield. I think that if you needed him to, he could play on the outside as well. Like, he has the physicality for it. I just think when you're the best receiver on your football team, you're probably going to play in the slot most of the time. I mean, when we look at guys, most of them play 65 to 75% in the slot, even if they are, you know, a traditionally built wide receiver. Giving him a two-way go, just, God, the lunch pail, like every white stereotype you can give.
He's not white. He's Colombian, by the way.
So. I know. I know the Restrepo name, being U.S. Army here, just from a Medal of Honor winner, but that's a story for another time. Restrepo is a dude. I mean, Cam Ward is a bigger reason why that football team is still undefeated. But if it wasn't for Xavier Restrepo being on that football field to be his blanket, that team's not undefeated. They're not coming back against Cal. They're not coming back against Virginia Tech without somebody like Xavier Restrepo on the team.
I agree. I even had to do a quick Google search of just typing in Xavier Restrepo concussion. He's never suffered a concussion either in his college football career, which is almost amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Because that dude is a contested catch animal for being as small as he is. I got to look that up real fast too. But I also love Xavier Restrepo. I think he is going to be one of the best value picks in the 2025 draft. Because I do think there is probably some limited upside. He is 6 of 11 in contested catch situations. That is 54%. That is more than 50%. And 50-50. And he is 5'9" and 190 pounds. I love him. But again, I do think, especially on that catch and run, that RPO he caught and made a couple guys miss, and he scored on the big catch and run there. I did see some defensive backs gaining some ground on him, so I definitely think there might be some athletic upside question marks, as well as role question marks at the next level, obviously. But he's one of those guys that's like, I don't care. So he's the meme of like the guy looking outside in the sun. There are two guys on the bus, the guy looking outside at the sun and the guy looking up at like he's depressed and down. And it's like, that boy nice and all these advanced metrics. Like, I don't care. That boy nice. He is going to be consistent and show up. I mean, we saw Hunter Renfro had some injuries and it kind of broke down. I think he's still a better athlete than Hunter Renfro was. And he's definitely more physical than Hunter Renfro was. I think that's probably the best comp we have for him that I could think of off the top of my head right now. Maybe some of those Peyton Manning slots, he would just go over the middle and get absolutely decapitated. Might be better comps at this point, but man, he is one of those old school. I'm going to catch everything. I'm going to absorb contact and I don't care. I'm going to do my job. He's awesome.
Yes, he is. And by the way, I wanted to double check here. Restrepo is the documentary that is about the Coringall Valley. It is not Sergeant Ramishi, who was at Cop Keating, who won the Medal of Honor. I got my wires crossed there a little bit with my Army folklore. But no, I'm just going back to Restrepo. He just seems like that, you know, third round wide receiver who's going to play for a decade and have a couple thousand yard seasons for a team. That's the way he seems like to me. And I'm really excited to follow that because he is immediately there's a gravity about him that you kind of flow to. And I'm really excited to see that happen at the NFL level as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. He's going to be around for a decade. Just an unbelievable player. But as we talked about, we're going to merge a little bit of Dafter Draft into this. And we're just going to do one Dafter Draft because we're already at our half hour point. Mm-hmm. We'll go a little bit over. It's cool. But we'll do one Dafter Draft here so we can use all of Tuesday and Wednesday on a mock draft here. So let's dive into that. And I was just doing some research on positions that tend to get drafted first overall versus positions of strength in this draft class. And they do not match up. It's quarterbacks, offensive tackles, or typically edge rushers that will go first overall in the NFL draft. We've talked about the quarterback class. We've talked about how every offensive tackle is a guard. That leaves edge rushers. Because ultimately, maybe Travis Hunter does go because he's such a unique player. I don't think so, but we've never had a corner drafted first overall. That makes me skeptical. So this Dafter Draft, let's talk about an ascending edge rusher who's going to test out of his mind, who's playing off the charts since entering Big Ten play. Dafter Draft, Abdul Carter is the best bet to go first overall on November 4th, 2024.
Ooh, the best bet overall?
To go first overall.
This changed up a little bit. It's changed up a little bit. I'm going to daft this. Okay. I'm going to daft this, and I'm going to daft it. If you would have said if a non-quarterback was going to be the first pick, would you daft or draft? I would draft. Mm-hmm. But I do think Shador is going to end up being the top pick.
Really?
I do because it's so, as long as the top pick is a quarterback needy team. The problem is this is a one quarterback draft. Mm-hmm. So even if that team isn't picking first overall, they're probably going to try to move up to first overall if they're not at two overall.
I think I disagree with that pretty heavily.
You don't think the NFL likes Shador that much?
No, I don't think the NFL likes any of these guys like enough to put to tab a first round potential top pick on any of them. Because there's so much nuance. Like obviously some of these guys like Garrett Nussmeier, some of these guys hate Garrett Nussmeier. Some of these guys like Cam Ward's got some fans. Some guys hate Cam Ward. So this has very much a 2013, 2022 feel to it, where 2013, it was EJ Manuel, the first one off the board, 17 down. Kenny Pickett was the only one off the board, 20 down.
But
I don't think Shador's going to go that way.
He's a better he's a better prospect than
Pitt. Yeah, that's like not to say, and EJ Manuel as well. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And that's not to say that. I still think he could go top five, top 10. I don't think NFL teams are going to mortgage the draft capital that it takes to trade up into the top five, into the top pick for a quarterback in this class. So I think it could be very much like Trayvon Walker, where Jacksonville had Trevor Lawrence. They just drafted him the year before.
Yeah.
And obviously they won out of that pick and nobody wants it. I think we could be sitting at that where
it depends who the first pick is.
Right. And right now the top two picks are New England and Jacksonville, and neither of them are taking a quarterback. New Orleans, probably not, because they're pretty hamstrung to Derek Carr for another year. And then you hit Carolina, Cleveland. Do I think Shador could go to Carolina or Cleveland at four? Carolina, Cleveland, Vegas, New York Giants are 4, 5, 6, 7. Maybe one of those teams looks to move up one or two spots, the kind of way the Jets did with the Colts when they
dropped. Or they just keep losing because, I mean, obviously there's a lot more that can happen this year.
Because I do think Drake May and the Patriots are going to win some games. Drake May's playing pretty good football.
Yeah.
So they're going to win some games. I think Jacksonville, maybe if they fire Doug Peterson, they might find a heart and a soul. But that team looks lifeless. New Orleans, same way. They did just fire Dennis Allen, but they look – I don't know what direction that team has. I don't think Carolina's going to keep winning. Cleveland will win some more with Jameis, and they'll lose some more with Jameis. Like, we've seen it the past 2 weeks. So it's going to go back and forth. But Vegas is a hot one to continue to lose out here. They are rudderless. They've already fired their offensive coordinator and their quarterback coach. And
can you imagine Shador and Deion in Vegas?
I feel like Shador and Antonio Pierce would like fight week one.
Well, that's what somebody brought up, Brian Flores, as a potential Cowboys head coach, to me on Twitter today. And I was like, he would fight Jerry and Steven within 5 minutes of being in the
middle. Well, that's what happened to him in Miami. The ownership turned on him because it was, yep. 100%. So I do think maybe, again, the Jets gave up, I think it was 3 third-round picks to jump from 6 to 3. I think is what it was when they came up for Sam Darnold. And the Colts ended up taking Quentin Nelson, I believe is how it played out that year.
Mm-hmm.
I think something like that's possible. So sure. But I mean, what it takes to get to number one is multiple first round picks. I don't think any team is investing that in a quarterback. And so assuming one of these guys doesn't, like Carolina, Cleveland, Vegas, or the Giants don't pick first overall, which I think Vegas and Carolina are pretty good pet bets too, probably get to that point eventually. But if it kind of sits how it stands today, where teams like New Orleans, Jacksonville and New England at the top of the board, I'm going to draft it because James Pierce is playing out of his mind right too, and he's doing an SEC play. So he has really kicked it up too since he's come back from his injury. Abdul Carter is going to test out of his mind at the combine. He's playing out of his mind right now. This is a Trayvon Walker class. Let's just bank on who has the best body type, the best tools, and let's go for it. New England makes a lot of sense too. If they are sitting up there, they just traded Judon, who has been that kind of weak side stand up 3-4 edge rusher for them. That's a perfect fit for Abdul Carter scheme wise, I think. And so I'm going to draft it right now. Again, if we're talking about another team, you know, if Jacksonville gets it again, that would be hilarious and unfortunate for them to be in that position where, you know, they have to take another Trayvon Walker like player. But I do think Shamar Stewart is another guy to consider because he has just one of one body type and the athletic prowess to go along with that one of one body type is going to be top five appealing to anybody, top 10 appealing to anybody, even if I think there's a lot to put together still as a pass rusher. Trayvon Walker was the same way. Trayvon Walker could kick inside more than Shamar Stewart does as well. And I thought Trayvon Walker had a little bit more flexibility in his hips than I think Shamar Stewart might. But it's kind of the same situation there.
He's also 20 pounds heavier than Walker
was. Yeah. I mean, we're talking 6'6" and 290 pounds.
Yeah.
He's a monster. Again, we talked about JJ Watt as the closest comp to what we've seen in recent NFL history to that body type playing strictly off the edge, which JJ Watt did kick into a lot of three tech as well. So that's selling JJ Watt short there too, but I'm going to draft it. Just gonna draft it because, you know, ultimately one of these teams might. But as the board sits today on November 4th, I'm drafting that the Patriots would take Abdul Carter first overall.
Yeah, and if we're doing it based off the board today, then I agree. I would draft it if we're doing it basing it off of the draft order today. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think, just too much there.
Abdul Carter.
Abdul Carter. Bend, explosiveness.
And I just want to bring up, you brought up James Pierce as well. I think that Carter's in a different league. When you look at him, I mean, it's kind of the difference between like a Micah Parsons-esque type of player and a Brian Burns-esque type of player for me. Like, you might get a little bit more overall pass rush production from a sack perspective from James Pierce. But Abdul Carter, Micah Parsons, that's game record type stuff overall. with just not just as a pass rusher, but for, as a physical presence, even being 245, 250 pounds, like levels more physical than somebody like James Pierce is, who is way more a finesse player overall.
Yep. I 100% agree. 100% agree. All right. That's a 40-minute episode there.
Yeah.
So we got in and out. We went a little over, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. Again, Wednesday, Thursday, we're doing another mock draft. It's been a couple weeks, 3 weeks since we've done our last one. So we're going to dive back in. This seems like a good thing to do, you know, as the draft order, especially now that we're 10 weeks into the season, is going to shuffle every single week. So, you know, every 3 weeks is probably a good time frame for the board to update and for us to get some more scouting done and build our own boards and be able to tinker around a little bit more. So we're going to do that. But for now, Dalton, do you have anything else to add before we get out of here?
I do not. Let's get out of here.
Let's get out of here. For Dalton, I'm Corey, and this has been the Daft on Draft podcast.